Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Robert. We are good to go.
Excellent.
All right. So let's start with your year of graduation, including if that was spring, summer, fall, and your major or majors.
I graduated in the spring semester of 1991, and my major was professional music.
Spring of, you said 1991?
That's correct.
Cool. All right, so we will get to your history later, but for now, tell us about. Oh, I'm sorry. One thing. What was your principal instrument?
Voice is my principal instrument, and I should also tell you that I worked for a time at the school as well. After a couple years after I graduated, so I feel, and my wife graduated from there, so I stayed in that community for quite some time after I had graduated.
Interesting. Got it. So, said voice. All right, sure. So, we will get to your history later. But for now, tell us about your current job. Where do you work? What do you do?
I work at High Rock Church, and that is located in Lexington, Massachusetts. And I serve as a pastor. This is a church. High Rock Church is actually... many churches here in the greater Boston area, and also with one campus located in Tokyo as well. And I'm kind of a new pastor. This location in Lexington is actually a new location for this church. It was a church that was young in some respects, was probably not going to be able to survive on the other side of this pandemic. And I was in the right place at the right time. I came on as their pastor, and this church, this larger church, High Rock, adopted this smaller church, and I became their pastor.
And the pastor of the smaller church.
The smaller church, which is all, it's called High Rock Lexington in that respect.
Yeah, so the different church will be High Rock and then the name of the community.
Exactly, you got it.
Got it. I think it's to say a fall under the umbrella of Protestant Christian then?
It would be one of the Protestant churches. I think it's kind of denominational background is old Swedish Covenant that they've changed their name since then, but it's kind of like a non-denominational church in terms of culture and feel. So we have a lot of people who are coming from different backgrounds, Catholics and Protestants, and some who would not associate with either of those.
Got it. So, and as you said, so there is, I guess, I think of congregational churches as kind of, that's sort of like whatever the congregation says goes, and then other churches are much more centralized.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe High Rock then?
You know, I've also served in congregational churches in that way. I'd say this is very similar. This is a congregational church in terms of it has voting. It's not kind of like this top-down driven model, but it has a council that represents the body as well, and those council members are voted in. So it's a very democratically based church model in that way. And so,
got it. And about how big is your church? Could you give it to, well, I guess we're currently, anyone listening, we're currently in 1991, sorry, we're currently in 2021 here, so like global pandemic, which I imagine might have an effect on numbers, but let's say, what's the typical size on a non-religious holiday?
So across this High Rock Church network of churches, there's about 2,600 people, but within Lexington alone, there's probably about 150.
Got it. Are you the one pastor affiliated with the Lexington Church?
I am the one pastor. That is exactly right.
Got it. Are there any other employees affiliated with the Lexington Church?
There is an office administrator, and what's great about this particular kind of being part of a network if there are circumstances, let's say counseling needs that come up, it's great that I don't feel alone on an island, but I'm able to rely on the expertise of other pastors within the network. And so that's been wonderful to have that for women's ministries and various other endeavors too. High school ministry, pastor.
Gotcha. Can you describe a little bit, you know, what your work week looks like? Because I'm sure a lot of people imagine that, okay, there's the Sunday service and probably, you know, crafting a sermon for it. But my impression is that ministers are put in a considerably more hours than just those endeavors. So can you describe about, like, what fills the week?
Yeah. Well, it's been a little bit different during this pandemic in that immediately we felt like, okay, how are we going? We can't meet in person. And so we all of a sudden small groups meeting online became critical for our survival. And so our oldest group, we have a group of women, about 15 women who are over the age of 75, between the age of 75 and 90. And they were the first group to jump onto Zoom and starting to meet online. And so I'm actually part of most of, we have several groups that meet, small groups. So I'm actually part of a lot of those groups, getting a chance to kind of interact. I lead some of those in the form of like a Bible study. Mm-hmm. And so it's been wonderful to stay connected in that way. But also, in addition to those kind of like, that's more Lexington-centric, I'm also using my musical gifts that I learned through Berklee. They have a part of this High Rock network that we've been having online services for all these High Rock churches. And so I participate musically in those, and those are broadcast on Sundays. And so there's a recording schedule that has to take place. Sometimes I'm the one who's actually, we call it quarterbacking or being the music director. So I'm choosing the songs. I'm communicating with the pastor in advance to find out which direction he's headed in his or her message. And then I'm getting all the music material. A lot of times I'm actually having to record it for the musicians and then sending it out to them. This is what I essentially want you to do, writing music, sending that out. And then we record it. We have a tight turnaround, usually of about 3 days to record it. And then there's a post-production process. And so I'm kind of involved, if I'm quarterbacking or serving as a music director, I'm involved in that as well, just making sure that they have the kind of the creative idea of what we're trying to do, that is communicated to another Berklee alumnus that I work with who does a lot of the post-production mixing and of that service.
Gotcha. So the music, and you said like that service, does that then go out to all the High Rock churches?
It does pretty, for the most part. Yes. There's probably, let's see, I guess there's about 11 different High Rock churches. I think there are a couple of them that are on their own, but other than that, the rest of them are participating with us.
Gotcha. Very nice. What are your typical working hours?
You know, it's I try to work Mondays through and in Fridays. I would say by the sundown on Friday, I try to observe kind of what I preach. So I'm trying to tell people to observe, have a Sabbath in the course of their week. So my Sabbath is generally on Saturday, like from about, I'd say, sundown Friday to sundown Saturday. So Sunday is typical, a full day with church services and sometimes group meetings afterwards. And then kind of the whole planning and meeting with people and quarterbacking, music director, getting music prepared, that's all kind of takes place Monday through Friday. And a lot of times those meetings can be in the evening hours. Sometimes they're in the morning hours. So it's kind of all over the place. And when it seems like as like Thursdays and Fridays can be a little bit lighter because all the heavy work has been done. And so I can kind of start to, I don't have to work quite as hard on those days.
Gotcha. It sounds like a lot. You did mention having like that group. It was like women 75 plus. Do you mind just naming a few other groups that you meet with?
Yes. There's another group that we have started, and we're going through a devotional series. And so that's been a wonderful, and a lot of that are just single adults that we're gathered together and kind of going through this book. There is a another group that meets on Monday evenings, and that's actually I lead that together with my wife, and that's for married couples typically. And so so it's been wonderful to be part of that as well. And there's one last group, and that is we call it an alpha group. It's basically for people who are interested, they're kind of searching, they're not sure that they kind of believe this stuff about Christianity, what's this all about, kind of exploring different different options and considering the claims of Christ. And so it's a good opportunity to kind of, I would consider it like maybe Christianity 101.
So alpha, like the first letter in the alphabet. You're just getting started.
Exactly. You got it. That's exactly right. Yes.
For a second, I was like, wait, alpha like dominant group? No, wait.
No, no.
Different alpha.
Totally different. Yes. Yes.
Very nice. Okay, so, and by the way, how long, don't go deep history, how long have you been with High Rock?
Only about a year and a half now.
Gotcha. So, well, let's take it back then to 1991, I guess, as you're finishing up Berkeley. I mean, I'm guessing you weren't thinking minister or pastor. Could be wrong.
You're right. I was not thinking minister.
So could you sort of put us in your headspace as you're wrapping up Berkeley? And then if you could sort of take us one step at a time from there to where you are now, both what you were doing, but also sort of where you were at in terms of music and your career.
Yeah. You know, when I graduated, I actually, on the same week that I graduated, I had proposed to my now wife. So I actually proposed to her on the Harvard Bridge. And we joked that it was either if she said no, I was going to jump off or push her off. We've joked back and forth. But my parents said, you know, I didn't know what to do, like in terms of career services and things like that. I don't remember them. They did have that, but I don't remember taking advantage of that when I was graduating. And like, what you do when you're graduating, you don't have a job, you don't know what to do, and so you go back where you came from. And so I'm originally from Central Florida, and so my parents, and I said, I'm getting married and I need to find a job. And my parents said, well, come on back home, you can stay here as you look. I remember my mom saying, you know, if you're coming back here, you might as well bring our future daughter-in-law. It would be great to get to know her. And so she came back with me. She was in Berkeley. She was a couple years into her major as well. And so I could not – it was in the early 90s. This is under – this was like during a pretty bad recession when I graduated. And
I remember that one.
Yes. I couldn't find a job. I had looked for a couple – you know, and spent a couple months looking. And I was like, I can't – and as soon as I first got home, I joking that my sister graduated from another university, and we both were joking. We were looking for jobs at the same time, and we kind of joked with each other. We said, hey, if we can't find a job in a couple of months, we can go down to the local grocery store, and we can get a job there bagging groceries. And we would kind of laugh at that. But after 2 months of looking for a job, I was like, you know what? I'm going down to the local grocery store. I've got to earn some income. And sure enough, I went in there in the same hometown that I grew up, my hometown I grew up in, seeing people that I went to school with, who taught me in school. And when they saw me at the end of the line bagging their groceries, they would look at me and point their finger like, didn't you go to college? And I would say, yes, I did. Paper or plastic? And it was my answer. And so it was, that was tough. That was actually really good kind of humble pie medicine. And also, like, this is not something that's just going to be given to you just because you have a Berkeley degree, that you really have to fight for what you fight for, it, so to speak. It's, and so I was fortunate that I actually, that year, that first year of our marriage, my wife is from Colombia, South America. So she was waiting for her green card to come in after we got married. And I had three part-time jobs. And my first job was working part-time as a music minister at a church. Second was working, as I mentioned, at a grocery store. And third, I was a teller at a bank. And so those three kind of kept our heads above the water. But I want the entire time, you know, the first week we got there, that we were there, it was like, why did we leave Boston? Those are all of our contacts. All of our music connections were right there in Boston, right in the Back Bay area. Mm-hmm. So we said, you know, we need to save up a nest egg so we can move back. And it was important. I wanted her to finish at Berkeley, and she wanted to finish as well. So after a couple of years, we actually came back to Boston, and she got a job first, and we had a nest egg, but she got a job first. We lived on Comm Ave in Brighton, and I actually got a job working at Shawmut Bank for some time in human resources, but the opportunity came open for me to work at Berkeley Admissions in the 1-800 operator, essentially taking all the calls. And I said yes. I just wanted to kind of like, I was making pretty good money at Shawmut Bank, but I wanted to get in the music industry. And I almost didn't care what it was. If it was answering the 1-800 number at Berkeley, that's where I wanted to be. And that, at least it was closer to the music industry. And so after some time of working there, my wife went back to school at Berkeley and started and returned there. And so I kept on kind of going through Berkeley. I got kind of advanced in the admissions area and jumped over into the Career Development Center and working closely with Peter Spellman, the director. And
got it. When did you start at Berkeley?
I started in 1993.
Got it. Okay, so fairly soon after you graduated.
That's true. And I worked there, though, for 15 years.
Wow.
It was awesome. And to see the music industry change, I mean, it was my job there while I was working, and my job changed in career services from being an assistant to being a coordinator to then being a career advisor. And it was my job to kind of stay up to date with what was happening in the music industry, to learn and about music publishing, and to help others to kind of navigate through those waters and to bring in employers to connect them with our Berkeley graduates. So it was a huge honor to be able to do that. And Peter Spellman's still one of my best friends, and always will be. So I have a ton of respect for him and grateful to him for bringing me in and giving me the opportunity to learn and grow.
That's true. Terrific. Just as a little side note, you and I then overlapped for a few years at Berkeley since I started in early 05.
Yes, we did. I'm so sorry. we should have gone out for coffee or something.
I know, right? So that's an impressive career at Berkeley, but you're not there at this point. So if I did the math, that means sometime in 2008. You moved on to something else?
That is exactly right. So I've actually always been bivocational, essentially having two jobs. So my full-time job was at Berkeley, but my part-time job was at Park Street Church, right on the corner of the Boston Common, outside Park Street T Station, that brick church.
The one right across from where the subway is.
Exactly. So I was the contemporary music director for their Sunday evening service for, oh, wow, I guess over 10 years I served there in that role. And so that was my part. And
Can I ask you one thing before we continue on? Mm-hmm. Because you mentioned that you know, one of your first part-time jobs was as music director in a church. and you're here as music director. Can I ask, like, did you grow up fairly religious? Were you always at a church, or did you just kind of like randomly fall into this?
Yeah, I was always involved. I had a really healthy church experience. I know that, sadly, I wish that were the case for everyone. But I had a great music minister when I was growing up, and he included me and encouraged me. He and his wife, she gave me piano lessons, and he was taught me voice and trumpet, and so I was really kind of nurtured and mentored in a church setting, and so a lot of that was based on sacred music or hymns and other styles of praise and worship and contemporary music. So that was part of my diet growing up, for sure.
So you grew up, so it wasn't like you kind of randomly fell into church music. It sounds like this was a real interest of yours.
It definitely became that. My parents encouraged me as well. And I had success. It seemed like as opportunities kept on coming my way. And when we came back, I should say, when we came back from Boston, my wife and I, I'm sorry, back from Florida to Boston, mm-hmm. Park Street Church was just starting this new kind of like edgy contemporary service, like getting away from kind of more of the sacred hymns and more towards kind of this rock kind of praise and worship rock style service. And with bringing out the electric guitars and the drums, that was back in that time. It was kind of radical thinking for a church of that stature to be doing that.
Sure.
And so it was a great opportunity. So I got in on the ground floor of that.
Understood. Okay, so now let's go back to 08 now that we've, you know, laid down those parallel tracks. So as you said, you had always been bivocational, right, doing the church stuff in addition to Berklee Career Center, the church music, I mean. So then what happens in 08?
You know, I had always been reluctant to go into full-time church ministry. I was basically kind of almost saying, like, God, I'll do anything for you, but I don't want to do that. And after some time, I was like, kind of almost like God kind of whittling down my heart. It was like, okay, God, if you want me to do this, I was vacationing up in Maine. I was on a lake. It was just like 6 o'clock in the morning, just me and the loons and the mist coming off the lake. And I just said, God, I give it to you. And if this is what you want me to do, I'm willing to do it. And so I apologize. I'm sorry for holding this back from you. And so I came back to Boston, and I made this grand announcement to my pastor at Park Street Church and said, hey, I just want you to know that I'm open to going full time here if that's what you want. And he said, thank you very much. He said, we don't need a full time minister, but if we did hire you, this is what we could afford. And I said, yeah, I can't take that kind of a pay cut, but thank you anyway. And like maybe a couple of weeks later, I saw, since I worked in the Career Development Center, a job opportunity. I'd seen thousands of jobs come through the Career Development Center. And this one job came through, and it was for a music director at a church. And I happened to have seen Dave Lamina, he's the chair of the piano department at Berklee currently. Mm-hmm. And he and I were riding the subway together on our way to work. And I said, hey, I know you serve at you have some connection at a church up in on the North Shore, up in Andover area. I said, do you know anything about this? He said, no, but I'll find out. And next thing I know, I got a phone call and just saying, hey, would love to have you, you know, consider working here. And so at first I just said, no way, absolutely not. I love the church. I love my job at Berklee. I love the church where I'm serving. I could never leave those places.
Sorry, when you say working there, was this like as a full-time music minister? Was this minister, if you know what I mean?
This would have been a full-time music minister.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And so it's pretty radical to find a full-time music ministry position. Those don't come around very often. And so I I said no pretty quick. And then 2 weeks later, this woman, she was a minister there, she called me back. She said, hey, I just want to tell you, we keep on thinking about you for this position. And you gave me a really quick no. I just want to make sure that your no really was truly thought through. And I said, you're right. I did give you a quick no. Sorry. And I said, why don't we meet and have a conversation? So in the meantime, I kind of had a sneaky plan. I actually visited the church on a Sunday, and I dressed as a homeless person, so to speak, intentionally. I had a pair of jeans that had enormous holes in them, and I didn't shave. I wore a skull cap. I didn't shower. I put on my worst jacket I could find, and I went there and just kind of sat in the back and kind of drank coffee and pretended like I was – like just kind of passing through. And I found, and people came up to me, they welcomed me, they were so warm and welcome and friendly. And I was like, all right, I guess this is the real deal. These folks here, they're really,
that's fantastic. I feel like that method should be applied more generally.
Yes. Into the corporate sector as well.
Yeah.
Yes. So I wound up working there, and I served there for 3 years, and that's in Andover, Massachusetts, at Free Christian Church. It's unofficially the last stop on the Underground Railroad, and it was an honor to work there at that location, such a historic location.
Nice.
And so, but this, I literally said, had a conversation with, we live in Woburn, had a conversation with my wife, and I said, if we could go to church anywhere, where would we go and why? And she said, probably Grace Chapel, because it's proximity, it's closer to us. We can invite friends and neighbors. I'm already involved in women's ministries. Our kids sometimes go to Vacation Bible School there. It's a huge place, a lot of resources. And so we both said yes. Not like maybe 2 days later, someone came by and told me, hey, they're looking for a music minister at that church and a pastor of worship and arts. And so, again, I reached out to them, and they were just kind of changing things. They were starting this new plan of launching new churches. And they said, would you be willing to come on board as our pastor of worship and arts? And I said, I don't have an advanced degree. And they said, well, you certainly have the experience, so we would take you as a pastor. You have a pastor's heart. So I served there for 8 years, eight and a half years, up until just recently.
As music minister.
Exactly, as kind of their full-time music minister, and it went from being a Lexington-only music minister, where they're located, to kind of being a music minister across all of their campuses, from Foxborough to Wilmington.
Sounds like a lot of work.
It was a lot of travel all over the place. It was kind of, I got to be kind of a chief musician, so to speak, across these campuses. And I didn't have to be the one doing everything, but I had to make sure that people were all playing in the sandbox well, that everybody was resourced and they had what they needed in terms of musicians and technology. And it was an honor and, again, a privilege to be part of a team at a time when this church was growing.
That's great. So, you know, you graduate Berkeley, you love the church, you end up as a music minister. Great. If you were still doing that, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So what made you make the leap from music ministry to ministry? Because we're up to 2019 when you got it sounds like you were then hired by High Rock.
That's right. I had been part of teams. Every 2 weeks at this large church. And again, this church is probably closer to 5,000 people, and every 2 weeks I would gather with pastors in a kind of, it looked like, we called the place where we would meet this, it looked like Air Force One, where the president would meet in that kind of location, and we'd sit around this oval table. All 12 or 15 of us, however many were there. And I noticed as I looked around the room, I am the only person in this room that does not have an advanced degree. Everyone else in this room is a pastor who's legitimately gone to seminary and has their master's of divinity or some other or doctoral degree. And I'm the kind of the ideate part of the team that's kind of responsible for ideation and theology. And I just felt like my own ideation was being hampered in that place. I couldn't participate at the level that I wanted to. And I felt like at some point I really needed, if I was going to continue in this field, I need to go to seminary to kind of keep my own chops in up to par.
Sure.
And so a few weeks later, I was waking up in the process of waking up one morning, and I literally had, imagine if I took my hands and smacked them in front of your face, like just clap them. It was kind of like a thunderclap like that. And it was, and the word was like, now is the time, go and apply to seminary. And so I was like, wow. That was like so abrupt, and I literally went to Google and did a Boolean search. I typed in, I wanted an experience similar to what I had at Berkeley, like an international experience, a creative experience. And so I literally typed in the words seminary, creative, and international. I used those three words, and the first like 15 hits that came up was Fuller Theological Seminary out in California. And I found this program called Masters of Arts in Global Leadership at a seminary. And I applied, got accepted, and I just graduated this past June. It was a 4.5 year stint in graduate school. Wow. I went straight through, taking one course a term, and just graduated in June. So it was.
So was this an online program then?
It was all online. I had like 2 weeks. 2 weeks here, I had to go there and be there in person, and then again 2 weeks later. But it was part of a cohort that we stayed together, and I had students from all over the world that was with me, and just like I would call them heroes of the faith, so to speak, like guys who were involved in justice, mercy mission, like rescuing children from brothels in Thailand.
Wow.
Pastors in Uganda who have to kind of sometimes serve as like a mediator between kind of solving or resolving conflicts between witch doctors in the sticks, so to speak, of Uganda. I can't think of any other word to describe that, but anyway, these are incredible people that I was honored to be in the same cohort with.
Wow, that's fantastic. So. Right, so you're going that for your – you say it was an MA degree?
It was, exactly.
Yep. And then – but that's still – let's talk – so you, as you're doing that on the career front, you move from music ministry to ministry. How did that all happen? What made you ready to be a regular minister as opposed to a music one?
Yeah, they had conferred that at this non-denominational church in Lexington I had previously had served in for 8 years. They had given me the title of pastor, even though I did not have the academic credentials. So, and again, I was the only one who had that. The time came where they actually had a bit of a financial crisis. And part of the solution to that financial crisis was to let go five of their pastors. And so I was one of the five who was let go, and they were very gracious, and they said, the most important thing for us, Robert, is we want you to find a good job. And I said to them when they told me that news, I said, who's going to want to hire me when I still have like a year left of seminary? I don't know if anyone was going to want to hire me. And he said, Robert, he said, everybody's going to want to hire you. He said, you don't have to worry about that. And so I was kind of keeping things with a loose hand. I didn't know what was going to happen. But the day after I got that news, I reached out to this senior pastor at High Rock Church, another very large church here in the greater Boston area. And he said, Robert, literally just yesterday, I had a conversation with a church in Lexington that is losing their pastor. They want to be adopted by our church, And I think you would be great to come on board to be their pastor, and because they're going to be a High Rock church anyway. And so, and I was very grateful for the opportunity. So in the meantime, I graduated and came on board. And so it's been a wonderful, it's, this in,
and it sounds like this was a, from a career perspective, I know I'm going at this more from a career perspective than a religious one, but it sounds like becoming a full minister was just sort of the next logical step for you.
I think it was. And part of that, if I'm going to be really honest, Kevin, is that I see an endemic problem in the church that I see ageism sometimes being practiced in the church where they don't want someone who is like, you know, close to 50 years of age leading something that's kind of like, I don't know. They want, you know, like the younger, the better, like somebody in their 20s. It's the same. They're trying to, in some ways, copy what we have in our culture, in the world, that the younger, the better. You see that happen in the music industry all the time. So, and unfortunately, it's in the church as well. And I just saw the handwriting on the wall that I don't know how far I can go as a music minister, you know, into my 50s, 60s, and 70s. Is that even possible? It used to be, but I don't know that that's possible anymore.
Right. Right. I understand.
Yeah.
Got it. Oh, and I'm sure you could probably talk for hours here about this, but let's say, and your current role as a, you know, regular minister, what are some of the things that you really like about that? About your role, about your career? Because I would just, I'll even preface it with this, right? Plenty of people are religious and aren't professional ministers.
Mm.
Right? So you could still be, you know, feel free to disagree. I would say, you know, one can still be very religious, very strong of faith without making that their quote day job, unquote.
Great point.
So simply saying, you know, I feel very religious, I feel a connection to Christ or whatever, is perhaps necessary but not sufficient for a career as a minister. There's something else too.
Mm.
So let's take your strong Christianity as a given, and then say, what is it, you know, about specifically actually doing the role of minister that you really enjoy?
I think over the last 8 years, the most amount of compliments that I've received for my professional career has not necessarily been about my music, although been some great opportunities, but people have been incredibly appreciative of my pastor's heart, they say, and that sounds kind of corny even coming out of my mouth to say that, but I didn't anticipate how quickly I would fall in love with these people at this church where I'm currently serving, and I think they have also connected with me in the same way that I have with them, and I love being with them, and I love the opportunity to – they go through struggles in life. They have kidney stones. They have children who go through crises and try to – sadly, and I'm just saying these because this has all happened in the past week, where someone has, a young person has tried to take their life. Oh, another person has emergency surgery for kidney stones. And I'm privileged to be with both of these kinds of situations and serve as a pastor and remind them that they may be going through these difficult times, but God is with them. He's not promised to keep them from these difficult situations, but he's promised to be with them in the midst of them. And so it's a tremendous that has become a newfound privilege and honor for me to serve and to love people in that way.
Got it. Great answer. Okay. So you answered this already. But I always ask this question at this point, which is, what is your current relationship with music? You mentioned working on the musical services for the High Rock Church. Is there any other music stuff you do? I mean, that's a big lift, obviously.
You know, that has been the biggest blessing of this whole thing of coming on board. So at this particular church where I'm serving, everyone has two areas of expertise. So I'm a community pastor in that way. But my other area of expertise is that I'm in worship arts and production, and that involves music. And so I am every week I am involved in music, and it is incredible. I love that I get to continue doing this. And I just recorded here a couple of days ago two songs, and I got to lead on one of those songs, and just really honored that the team that I'm surrounded with, they're all like 20 years younger than me, but they're like, they want me on their team. I can tell that they enjoy having me serve, and it's just so, I'm tremendously privileged to continue with kind of like my, in some respects, to do what I first loved to do and what I connected with God, and that is through music. And then I have this other passion of pastor. So it's not that music has taken a back seat or is diminished, but it's kind of like they've become like parallel or kind of like partners in some respects. And so I'm living the dream in that regard.
That's awesome. So, all right, next question for you. Thinking about your role, and let's even say your role as regular pastor, putting the music stuff to the side for the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking back to your experience at Berkeley as a Berkeley student, is there anything that you feel like your Berkeley experience did particularly well to prepare you for your current job?
I think one of the things that has been great about Berkeley and I got to see happen is that the curriculum continues to evolve and improve and to change over the time. So when I actually went and took some courses, like, hey, this course was not offered whenever I was here. So I went back and took a music technology course. It's the intro course for all incoming students. That was not offered when I was there. And so I was like, I need to take that course. And so I think Berkeley has done a great job of staying current and also having their own curriculum review process. I actually served on the back in 2008 when they were in the process of looking at.
I remember that.
Yes. I was honored to kind of be part of that process along with hundreds of other people there on faculty and staff. And so it was, I think that has given me and you go back, as I've heard other alumni say this, you go back and you see the improvements of the infrastructure, courses, equipment, facilities. It's just, it brings you some pride in that way. But this is going to sound crazy when I tell you, back to the answer to your question, though, this is going to sound really quite crazy when I answer this. But I think one of the most important courses that I took at Berkeley was music notation. And the book was written by Barry Nettles back in the day. I can't even remember my professor right now. It'll come to me in a moment. He has since passed. But just learning how to properly, because I've written so much music in terms of arrangements and giving that to other musicians and working with classical musicians, some from the Boston Pops and different ones. And I was like, you got to know how to notate all of these ideas correctly. And if you don't, yeah, it really kind of puts you behind the eight ball. So I that has served me more so than just about anything else.
Okay. Very, very nice. Let's turn that question around because Berkeley gives that one degree to the bachelor's in music. And, you know, after a slightly bumpy start in 1991, I was right there with you, by the way. You know, you've had a really excellent career. But all that said, when you look back at your Berklee education, is there anything where you say, you know, hey, this would have been really useful to have learned while I was in college, and Berklee could have taught this to me, and they didn't? Anything missing or incomplete?
Gosh, that's a tough one. I think I did learn it, but it seemed like it took a long time for someone to show me. And so many times I would actually submit a chart there at Berklee, and I was submitting a lead sheet, and what they wanted was a chord chart. So if they get a lead sheet and they have the melody and they got the chords above it, I remember in the ensembles, I would get just absolutely ridiculed about that. And I just couldn't understand. It's like, what is it that they want? And I finally figured out, it's like the guy selling the real books out on the corner, they just want it simplified into the format of like a chord chart. And I didn't, and for some reason, just that vernacular, the difference between a lead sheet and a chord chart. And so I was like a couple semesters in before I kind of like, as a vocalist, voice principal, I was like, oh, I get it now. I was like, okay, I didn't understand what they, so I somehow, I think I missed some, maybe I tested out of something that I shouldn't have tested out of or something. I don't know. But anyway, that was kind of frustrating to me early on, but that's a very minor thing. Other than that, I can't really think of anything.
Okay.
Yeah, I like it that they have not only the gospel choir, but they have also a contemporary Christian ensemble. I probably would have taken that back in the day if that had been available. So, and recording ensembles, those are probably my favorite ensembles of all. I wish I would have taken more of those.
Gotcha. Very good. All right. So, I guess let's say for the current crop of Berklee students, or maybe other people just after graduation who are kind of wondering, oh, no, you know, what comes next? What am I going to do? Do you have any general advice for them?
Yes. One of the things that I really like that Berklee instituted many years ago, and this is, again, after I graduated when I was working there, is that they had some MP&E students who would graduate. And they would then ask, hey, I'm getting ready to graduate. What programs, what equipment should I purchase? And MP&E department and music technology area said, this is a disservice if that question is being asked on the backside as they're graduating. And they said, you should have and be using all of this equipment in the process of your education here. And so the whole laptop initiative program began. Mm-hmm. I think in the same way, sadly, I don't think students are thinking – they may be utilizing the tools, but I don't think that they are all the time thinking like, hey, these courses that I'm taking and these homework assignments, they need to serve as building blocks in my career toward my – helping me in my career goals. And I think too often – I was guilty of this. We see them as kind of one-off homework assignments. And I think we need to see a bigger picture that we're really kind of building tools. And if I could give one, this is actually my dad gave me the best career advice of anyone that I've ever met. And he is a non-college, never attended college. And he said, Robert, he said, whatever you do, choose to do, if it's music, I want you to, you need to have a goal. And he said, I was kind of like the Forrest Gump, the feather at the end of Forrest Gump, kind of like just taking wherever the wind goes. He said, but if you have a goal, he said, you may not hit the bullseye of that goal. Maybe you hit maybe the bullseye is performance. The next ring outside of that is songwriting. Maybe the third ring is music education. Maybe the fourth one is music business. But the main point is that if you hit the target, you may not hit the bullseye, but you hit the target, and the entire target represents the music industry. And so at least you will be working in your industry of choice. And so I tried to follow that model as well. But at the same time, sometimes there is a branch off of that target that you find. And so I was working in music, in performance, in a church setting, but then these other skills come along. And so anyway, all that to say is things can change, but it's important to have a goal along the way and to start that career, not when you graduate, but on your first day, if not earlier, walking in on your first day of the school year, your first semester.
That's terrific. And you've done well over 180 interviews. You're my second you know, minister of some sort. I'd say probably someone listening to this who's made it this far is perhaps sort of thinking about becoming a minister professionally, a career in the church. Do you have any specific advice for them?
Yes. The one thing I would not compromise on is I've been in situations where you work at a church and you look at the senior pastor and you hear the teaching, and the teaching sounds like just a bunch of baloney, or that this person that the senior pastor is one person in front of the church, but is a monster in meetings and is kind of belligerent and kind of a bully to the church staff. I would say run as fast as you can from those situations. So you have to, even if you want to be, this is a great job opportunity and it pays well, don't be fooled. It is incredibly important for your soul to work at a place that is going to feed your soul, and because you have to be in a position where you're ministering to others. And if you're not getting fed spiritually and being taken care of, and know that this person is a big advocate and support of you, then it's not a healthy place to work in. So that would be so find a very healthy church to be in would be my recommendation.
Oh, that's great advice. I just have one last question for you, Robert, which is, you have the mic. Is there anything we missed or anything else you'd like to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that, so I mentioned that my wife, she went to Berkeley, and so she went there. She was actually contemporary writing. It's contemporary writing and production, but when she was there, it was commercial arranging for some time. And so we've been married 30 years this year. She's a music educator, and she graduated music education. She changed her major while she was there. And so so it's been wonderful to have kind of commonality that she's coming from Colombia. She had her passion for salsa music and different styles of music. Then she thinks when we all get to heaven that we're all going to be speaking Spanish and singing and singing salsa and dancing salsa. So we met in the Christian Fellowship Club there on campus. So not to scare anyone away from the Christian Fellowship Club, but I think that I was a leader in that club organization. If you haven't been part of that, and if that's something that would be of interest to you, the Christian Faith or Explore It, I would recommend checking out that group.
All right. That's great. Well, hey, Robert, this was very enlightening. Thank you very much for taking the time today.
Kevin, thank you so much for doing this. And thank you. I can't remember what number interview I am based on all the listing of interviews, but you've done an awesome job. And this is going to be such a blessing to so many people. So thank you for this.
Thank you. All right. Have a great evening. Take care now.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye.